Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob.
Talking.Golf is presented by the Wisconsin State Golf Association. Have you heard the news? The Wisconsin State Golf Association is now the publisher of Wisconsin.Golf. That's right, Gary D'Amato and me, Rob Hernandez, we are one of several contributors now to the new and improved Wisconsin.Golf website. It's all under the auspices of the Wisconsin State Golf Association. If you'd like to sponsor, be a sponsor or be a partner in our venture, you can reach out to Rob Jansen, the executive director of the WSGA, at rob@wsga.org. Not really a sponsor, Gary D'Amato, but I tell you what, we're really excited about all the progress we've seen since we've come under the WSGA umbrella. It's going to be close to a record month for a normal month in January in terms of page views. And we've had a lot of great stuff from Caitlin Moyer. We've got Rick Platel in the works here with some stuff. Well, he had the story on the Evan Scholars from Wisconsin. And it's fun to see this kind of grow and expand. And a lot of energy this time of year with Rob back at the WSGA offices. And, you know, he's done a lot to try to get the word out and get people on board because we do need your help. And it's been a fun first month here as we are almost to the back end of January.
Yeah, no, you're right, Rob. It's great being under the WSGA umbrella. They've got I think close to 60,000 WSGA members. So our newsletters go out to those members. And I think more and more people in the outer reaches of the state who may not have known about us are finding out about us. And it's great to have other voices on our site. Caitlin's column on the Parade ball washing machine she bought for her dad was a really fun read and generated some pretty good numbers on our site. So, yeah, it's great to – I think it bodes well for our future, I think.
Absolutely. And it's been fun to see Rob Jansen work with our Mike Davis on the Friday newsletter, which is we've seen a great spike in traffic on Fridays as people who might not have had time to read our stuff throughout the week get a chance to see it all in one place. And so it's kind of a new era for both of us, the WSGA and Wisconsin.Golf. And of course, the WSGA also working with the WPGA. And so it has been a fun start to this new era of Wisconsin.Golf. It's been a busy week already for Gary D'Amato. He's joining us from Florida. I'm in Arizona. We're talking about golf in Wisconsin. How about that, folks? And Gary, just off the golf course, the second of the two-round Golf Writers Association of America annual championship. It was at Mission Inn Resort in Howie in the Hills, Florida. Right. Yesterday was Las Colinas. Today was El Campeón. Gary D'Amato, how did it go?
Well, first of all, I want to know what your daughter Rachel shot when she played in the NCAA Division III championship here, because these courses are not easy, Rob. Especially yesterday, it was blowing windy and cold. So, how did Rachel play when she played these courses?
You're testing me here. I'm going to look this up. I know that her first round, she kind of surprised herself and surprised her team. She played the number five spot. This was back in, 2014. No, 2015. Okay. The 2014-15 season. And let me see here.
Tell you what, while you're looking that up, yeah. I will tell you that nobody played really. 32 people entered this tournament, the Golf Writers Championship. And only three people broke 80 yesterday on the Las Colinas course. It was mid to high 40s and wind blowing 30 miles an hour, Rob. It was tough. It was like playing golf on March 1st in Wisconsin. And Lee McKay, though, 74 years old, shot a 72 yesterday. It was the best score by, I think, six shots. Wow. Yeah, that's pretty incredible. He shot 78 today and won the low gross. Nice. 74 years old, he just about shot his age over 36 holes, so pretty good.
Now, I know your score, okay, you asked the question. So my daughter Rachel, when she played for Stout as a freshman back in 2014-15, shot, and this was only on El Campeón, 80, 84, 83, 84, and she tied for 37th. She was Second on the team behind Allison Van Hoeklem, who's now working as a club professional down here in Arizona. And just ahead of Rachel's inspiration for going to Stout, Britt McNett-Emerick, who's now very talented club pro in the Wisconsin section over at Blackhawk Country Club. So there were a lot of ups and downs that week, especially because she was only freshman. The other four young ladies were seniors. And you can imagine, Gary, after playing El Campion, how frustrating it can get. And you think about, you know, seniors and their last ever college event and, you know, the grind. That was quite a week down there. And it was hot. I mean, we came from, a cold spring in Wisconsin, and I think the temperatures were pretty much in the 90s, and so it was a shock to us. So you got more of what, you know, it was a little bit of a shock to the system, the weather you got there, but it was challenging. How did you do today?
I played poorly today, Rob. The highlight was a closest to the pin prize and a birdie on one of the par threes. The low light was a three putt from 3 feet.
No.
I lipped one out. Yeah, I lipped one out on the high side, and then I lipped out the second putt. Two 3-footers I missed. So I had a bad day with my short game, Rob. I shot 89 yesterday, and I shot 90 today, Rob. Was not happy with either of those scores. It was tough, and my short game just isn't there at all. Putting and chipping was just horrible. I hit the ball okay, but, I mean, I just threw away probably – 7 or 8 shots every day around the greens.
In your defense, though, I mean, tell our listeners a little about, especially El Campion. Campion is where they play the men's Horizon League Championship. Las Colinas is where they play the women's. But, you know, with IMG not too far away, and there's another academy right across the street. You know, this is a course that is really it's an old course, but a destination course. How would you describe it to our listeners?
Yeah, very unusual for Florida, because you've been at this course, Rob, and you know how hilly it is. El Campion is up and down some very, very steep hills for Florida. Everyone thinks Florida golf is flat, and for the most part it is, but these courses could be, you know, up in northern Wisconsin just with different flora and fauna on them. I mean, they were, you know, you had to play sometimes into the wind uphill 2 or 3 more clubs than you normally would. And you probably remember walking up and down those hills. They're steep.
Yeah, they are. And then, you know, the way that a lot of the greens especially were protected by, if not bunkers, you know, certainly water hazards. I mean, yeah. I was surprised at how much, you know, water there was. And, you know, they made some of those par threes pretty difficult too. And, So to get a closest to a KP, as we call them here in league, I don't know why they call them KPs, but you know, is a feather in your cap, because, and especially with conditions as they are, and I mean it, and you know, so you've got kind of the winter Florida going on right now, and but you know, a lot of the year, you know, you can be playing in that area, and it can be sunny and 75, 80 degrees 1 minute. And you can be rained on the next. I mean, that's Florida golf in a nutshell. So it's really I and then the grass down there, Gary. Now I didn't play
different
those. Yeah. But I, you know, the year that I went with a group from Wisconsin out of Reedsburg Country Club to the Old Scramble, down at the Disney courses. I mean, it was my first experience with I guess Bermuda greens and Bermuda, you know, grass around the greens. And at that time of year, because it was, I guess, maybe not overseeded the way it is today, at least the way it is out here in Arizona, you know, if I missed a green, that ball was sitting down. I mean, that made it very difficult to get through it. And then, of course, the greens are much more difficult to read grain versus, you know, break bent grass. So all those probably conspired to, you know, inflate the score a little bit today.
Yeah, nobody, I mean, only 2 or 3 guys I thought played really well, and almost everyone else, you know, struggled. And you're right, especially yesterday on Las Colinas when the wind was blowing, really, I don't want to exaggerate, but it was probably 25 and gusting into the 30s, which is a lot of wind. And if you had a downhill, downwind, downgrain putt, I mean, you just couldn't stop the ball. You'd have a 20-footer downhill, and you'd have a 12-footer coming back up the hill. It was just, it was hard to putt yesterday. But no excuses. I mean, you know, I wasn't happy with the way I played, and I think a lot of other people who played in this championship probably could say the same thing.
Now, you told us last week your first round pairing was a cavalcade of Wisconsin stars, past and present.
Yeah.
Gary Van Sickle, Chuck Garbedian, and Gary D'Amato in the same group. How did that go?
It was fun. We had a great time. Gary Van Sickle played very well. He shot 77 yesterday, which was second low score to Lee McKay's 72. Chuck shot 84. I shot 89. Chuck played great, except he had two bad holes. I think he had a double and a triple back to back. Other than that, he played really well. But I got to say, and if Chuck listens to this, I nipped him for the close of two today. He had his name on the plaque, and I got inside him.
That's even better, Gary D'Amato.
Yeah.
We can use that. And we should say too. I mean, and not just because Michigan, was the host to this, but beyond the golf course, it's just a unique area.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the area. Because the banquets were on site, the parents would usually go off and drive maybe 15, 20 minutes around some of the, some roads that kind of cut through peninsulas. I kind of equate it to driving along John Nolan Drive on the way to our old Killarney offices downtown, with that isthmus there. It's a lot like that for a longer stretch to get away from Howie in the Hills, but there's a lot of places to go eat around there. Howie in the Hills itself is like a northern Wisconsin town, very charming. And the resort, though, it's a solid resort, Gary.
It is. It's a big, sprawling resort with two really good golf courses and a very nice hotel. I was actually surprised at how big and how nice the place was. I would say first-class resort and two really good golf courses.
Well, so the GWA championships are in the book. That was Gary's story. I told Gary before we came on the podcast I was going to regale him with a story of my own. We had the final leg of the three-day President's Cup here in the Pebble Creek Men's Golf Association, and it was singles, Gary. And me, and if I'm not playing with somebody, it's close your eyes and don't watch this. I played a guy. We weren't giving each other strokes, so it was all straight up. We started on hole seven, and I lose hole seven. I lose hole eight, and by hole nine, I'm like, oh, crap, this is really going to be an ugly, ugly day. And I hit a drive out into the right dormant Bermuda and then pulled my next shot out of bounds and went back, re-hit, and then had a nice shot into the green, and it hit short, and it rolls in the pond. I conceded the hole three down with three holes into the match, Gary, and at seven, eight, and nine, I was this close to just going in the clubhouse and waiting for everybody else to finish. Because there was free beer afterwards, but and instead
I rallied.
I wound up. He kind of faded down the stretch a little bit, and I started playing a lot better. Started making pars, which that's really what you got to do in match play. And I was one up with one to play, and he hit his drive on the sixth hole, our final hole in the left rough. Had about maybe 150, 160 yards. He hits this nice little line shot into the bank of a green that was a little bit above our feet. It hits in the bank, rolls onto the green, up to the hole within 3 feet. And then I've got about a 9-iron from maybe 125, 130, and I knock it in there to the right side of the green. It trickles down 5 feet. His is uphill, his 3-footer. Mine's 5 feet down the slope. So I took a page out of Steve Stricker's book. I towed the putter, tapped it on, and it's rolling, it's tracking, it stops two rotations short of the hole.
And what? Down the hill?
I don't know how it stopped. I have no idea. And then he taps in for his birdie to win the hole, have the match. So it probably ended the way it should. I played lousy early. He kind of played lousy late. We both played very well in the final hole. But our team won. My team won overall. So on a $30 entry fee, I brought home $51 in shop credit. So I've already spent some of that on those grips that I told you about last week. So now I've got the opportunity to regrip more. But match play is just a different animal, Gary. It's amazing how the mind works.
That's quite a story, Rob. That's a great comeback by you. Did he help you out a little bit and make a couple of a big number here or there, or did you just play really solid?
Well, we both made a big number midway through the round. I think we both, Let me see. Yeah, so on the par five on the back nine that I normally, you know, birdie, or I've hit the green in two most times. I for some reason was trying to avoid the bunker on the left, fanned it out to the right, and it must have hopped off the cart path, and it's literally one ball inside somebody's backyard in a wrought iron fence. So I've hit one OB there. So I play my second ball, and I made a seven with that one, and made a pretty good putt for that. And he on his, he was trying to play it safe, and he fanned one out on his second shot and goes in the water. So we both made sevens to have a hole. That was the ugliest. But otherwise, I felt we played pretty well. I made a few pars late. He did help me out on numbers four and five, hitting the water there, and one OB. But other than that, it was a pretty even match. Again, it's just, you know, when you use handicaps, if the handicaps are working, and in match play, you know, it really can be a fun experience. And we don't play very much of that outside of this President's Cup thing, and maybe the, I don't even know if the members of is a match play thing, but you know, the cries for match play, I hear them. I mean, I think it's great. I think it really makes for a much more enjoyable experience. I know that when I, you know, screwed up those first few holes, you know, as bad as it was on the scorecard, you know, at least in the match, it wasn't that bad. And I guess that's why they have all these different formats that we see, you know, in various settings throughout the year on the PGA Tour and elsewhere.
Well, they say a tie is like kissing your sister, but it had to feel pretty good after being three down after three. That's one time you'll take a have, right?
I will take a have. Yeah, there were several matches that were have. There were a couple 10 and 8s. And I got to admit, Gary, at one point during the round, I felt I was headed towards a 10 and 8. But I don't know how many. It was a full field over two courses. So there were a lot of matches going on at one time, but it was a fun experience. And we've played our golf, and now you get to go kind of walk the floors of the PGA merchandise show the next couple of days. And I tell you what, it's going to be a fun experience. I just tried looking at the website and to see, you know, what kind of things you might be seeing. I couldn't even get through the letter A in the alphabet. I mean, it is a deep vendor list, and if there's any COVID hangover in terms of quantity of vendors, that's out the window.
Yeah, I think the show has made a huge comeback from 3 years ago when the show, I think, went on, but with a very, very small, you know, probably 50 or 60% of the exhibitors that they have now. And it's gone back up 1 million square feet of exhibitor space at the Orange County Convention Center. It's a huge convention center. I think it's the second biggest in the country. And just about every inch of that place is used. Tomorrow, Rob, is Tuesday is demo day, where it's at the Orange County National Golf Course, where they have a huge circular range, you know, 300 yards across, more than that, 500 yards across, probably big circular range. And all the equipment manufacturers are there with their newest stuff, you know, Cobra, TaylorMade, Ping, Titleist. And you can walk around this ring, this huge circular range, and just stop at any booth you want in and demo all the new equipment. So that is a lot of fun, because you can, you know, you can hit anything. You can, any new clubs that are out just about are going to be there. So I'm looking forward to that. And then Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday are the show dates at the convention center. And that's when I'll be visiting some booths and looking for good stories and good equipment stuff to write about.
Absolutely. I was going to say, I know that one of the vendors, I believe, that's going to be exhibiting can tout the fact that they got a W this last week on the PGA Tour Champions. We'll talk more about Steve Stricker's week out in Hawaii, but Stephen Elker had himself quite a week out there, and he was using a new, I guess, a new set of irons. And obviously ran away with that tournament. And yeah. Let me see what we it was a new level, a Scottsdale company. You can see it on his hat. And he's been with them for 4 or 5 years. And he was working their irons and wedges. And obviously they fit pretty well. And he said that they were going to be releasing what he was playing with soon. He didn't see a reason to wait for the release to get him in the bag. And that paid off. I posted a story today, Gary, on Stephen and Danny Sinicki and the great stuff they're doing with TikTok videos to grow the game of golf with their Twin Tour Golf. Danny and Stephen are our former UW Parkside golfers from Menominee Falls. And lately they've been doing a lot with miniature golf to try to grow their audience. And we updated the story after it posted, but they're going to be at the PGA show this week, Gary, with your friends over at Caliber Golf, the hockey stick putters. And they're one of the partners that they've been able to work with here on. I was trying, as I wrote the story, Gary, to wrap my mind around how you make money off of TikTok videos. I believe you and I could do this. I think we can. What would people our age use? Well, how would this work? And we could play golf with probably hats that cover our head because we don't have a lot of hair.
You've got a fine head of hair, Rob. I don't have any.
It's getting bleak. Their list of partners covers everything from grips and things to they've been working with Pop Stroke. They worked with the AI-1 putter release through Callaway and Odyssey. They were down in Frisco, Texas when that baby was unveiled. So, I mean, wow. People are watching these videos and seeing these guys and Steven's girlfriend Bella Dory, who was a golfer up at Concordia St. Paul, and she's in some of these. Their older brother and sister have been in some of these. Tommy Winkler, a former teammate of theirs at Parkside, was in one, and he's got a TikTok following apparently all to his own. Every bit as much or more than what the Sinickies have. So this has changed. I mean, could you imagine, back when we first started covering golf, Steve Stricker, Jerry Kelly, Skip Kendall, JP Hayes, Dave Miley, all being on TikTok and marketing themselves that way. It just doesn't register with me.
No, it doesn't. I have a hard time picturing all those guys being social media mavens. JP does have a little interesting profile, at least on Facebook, when he's a pilot. Rob owns his own plane, I think, and he posts all kinds of stuff from his exploits as a pilot. But, yeah, I don't think any of those guys are – I mean, I don't think Stricker is big into social media. Kelly, Jerry does a little bit of it. But, it was a different era 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, but they're going to be at the show. I told them to look out for you. There'll be a number of Wisconsin vendors at this thing. And then I was, watching the PGA Tour champion stuff over the weekend. They're also going to be, Watson Lynx. Tom Watson was on the PGA Tour champions, broadcast, over the weekend. And he was touting, it's kind of the next level of first tee, he described it, in the Kansas City area. And Tom himself is going to be at the show. On one of the main stages during one of the, I guess it was like more or less a forum on junior golf. I'm excited. I mean, this is a guy who just, his mind is, he kind of feels to me like Phil Mickelson of the previous era where, I'm not sure that everybody quite, put him in the same category as Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player, Arnold Palmer. I know I did. I was always a huge, huge Tom Watson fan. But I really love what he's done to give back to the game. And this Watson Lynx concept seems like it's, going to take some of the principles of the first tee and then combine it with competitive golf and get some kids maybe opportunities along that line. But he'll be down there too. I mean, I'm guessing, Gary, when you go to one of these things, you never know who you're going to see on the showroom floor.
Yeah, I think Tom Watson is doing a news conference. So I know there'll be a media attendance at that one. I'm sure he'll explain the concept and what he's doing. But yeah, I've over the years, I've probably been to the show 25 times now. And I remember bumping into Byron Nelson years and years ago. Wow. I've seen Annika Sorenstam. I think she's here at the show this year. A lot of teachers, David Ledbetter's here every year hawking a new book or a new video or a new gizmo. And speaking of that, one thing I hope I get a chance to see is I think on Wednesday afternoon they're doing a golf version of Shark Tank with David Ledbetter. One of the original Shark Tank guys is on there. Wow. I forget his name. There's like a panel of five teachers and people who have golf inventions are going to pitch them to Ledbetter and these guys to see if they are interested in, picking them up or possibly doing something with them. So I hope to catch that. I think it's going to be like a half hour or an hour at some point late in the afternoon, I think on Thursday. So there's so much stuff going on at this show, Rob. I mean, I've got appointments on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. My appointment calendar is just booked those 3 days.
Yeah, I mean, and it's everything. I'm just looking here, you know, Supermex Golf, a Lee Trevino family brand with a focus on high-quality golf apparel. The logo is a sombrero with a golf club through it. It's got headwear, outerwear, and it's one of many minority-owned businesses. As I was scanning through the list of vendors, there's a lot of new exhibitors. There's one thing I wanted to ask you about, Gary, because you've probably seen this kind of stuff with all the number of years that you've been at the show. The Batcaddy Evo Follow. It's the latest technology in I guess electric golf caddy carts. That's, you know, that we've seen. I know Maggie Leaf, you know, has the one where she pushes the button and it goes without her having to push it. But this Batcaddy Evo Follow retails at $24.99. That's not $24.99, Gary. That's $2,499. To me, that seems. I'm not the kind of guy who's going to pay that for his golf cart. I'm kind of looking for that, Matt, for my season membership somewhere.
Right, right. Yeah, and some of the technology you see here, one thing that's really exploded the last, I would say, 10 to 12 years is home simulators, do-it-yourself simulators. Yeah. And that technology is getting better and better and better. And Carl Markestad from Carl's Place in Milton, who I've written about, who is one of the leaders in do-it-yourself and home golf simulators, I know, I think has a presence there this week, but, you know, you didn't see any home simulators or any of the TrackMan 15 years ago. And now there's dozens and dozens of those guys with the latest and greatest technology that just keeps getting better and better and cheaper too.
I also like, the companies that get their, you know, it starts out as a niche following and then it explodes into, I've got to have one of those. Bad Birdie Golf has been a very colorful provider of golf apparel through the years. My friend Ed Swab at the Wisconsin PGA offices, his son Marty, was wearing a Bad Birdie flamingo shirt at one of the WPGA Junior Championships. And I said to Ed, only Marty can rock the flamingo shirt like that. But and then I'm in my you know, local, I guess it's a Fry's grocery store. And I see Bad Birdie Golf logoed beer. It looks like the makers of the Four Peaks Brewing Company down here in Arizona is now marketing Bad Birdie logos on a version of their golf or on the version of their beer cans. And I'm not sure what kind of flavor. I'm guessing it's got to be fruity if it's a bird. But you know, it's just amazing the reach that some of these golf you know, companies have these days.
It is, and the thing we haven't even talked about is 40% of the showroom floor is apparel, shoes, apparel, clothing, and I barely venture over to that part of the convention center because there's so much golf-wise to see, but I know a lot of our state golf PGA professionals come down here. I saw Danny Rainbow the other day, Rob.
Oh, nice.
At El Campeon.
Wow.
Yeah, our friends from Central World and Stevens Point, Danny and Katie were there. Because their shop, their golf shop was named Wisconsin PGA Section, I believe, Golf Shop of the Year last year.
Yeah.
And Danny explained to me that they got invited to an annual conference because of that. And he was at Mission Inn. It was funny bumping into him in the bar area.
Wow.
Danny Rainbow? Yeah, that was cool. But yeah, a lot of PGA professionals from our state and from throughout the country do their, do their buying for the year. So a lot of them are down here looking at apparel and how they're going to stack their, you know, stock their golf shops this year.
998 visitors at the PGA Merchandise Show in Florida, and 381 new exhibitors, what they call 113 what they call premium exhibitors. The clubhouse looks interesting. Product categories are interesting from, as Gary said, 362 vendors with apparel and apparel accessories, 102 vendors with golf bags, only 31 with golf balls, which is a little bit surprising given how many. But I guess, you know, I'm seeing more and more, you know, golf balls now because I tend to look for golf balls on the golf course, Gary. But Encore, O-N-C-O-R-E, is a golf ball brand that is – at least gained a foothold here in our community. I'm seeing people with hats and finding the golf balls. I don't play him, but I do give him what I do to a guy who does. You know, so I would think balls, you know, we've kind of, I think we understand Pro V1 is the Cadillac of golf balls, but yet you can find similar golf balls in TaylorMade, Callaway, you name it. And then even, you know, the Kirkland brand, I've had people tell me that they slap a different logo on after the Titleist people are done, you know, printing their balls. I don't believe that, but there's a lot of people who swear by Kirkland.
Yeah. Does that, I don't know what you're looking at, but does it tell how many putter companies are at the show? Because that's another thing. You'll, I would guess there's probably 40 to 50 putter companies, every putter in the world this year.
They've it's got 100, cool 106 golf equipment vendors. I would have to bet that, I was going to say 100 of those have to be selling putters because you're right. Because I'm seeing here the two thumb putter grips. So if they're not selling putters, they're selling something to help your putter. And, you know, Super Stroke was kind of the pioneer of the larger grip. I know that when I saw Pearson Hunt at the Collegiate All-American thing, the Patriot All-America over here in Arizona, you know, his medium length putter had a special grip on it for that putter that allowed his hand to kind of, you know, be flat against his dominant hand there on the follow through. You know, there's a grip for every putter, but there's a putter for every person. I hope your friends at Caliber get that hockey putter out there. I mean, did you use that at the Golf Writers, or have you put another putter in the bag? Are you switching out here and there?
No, I used it, and I putted pretty good, except for the one ugly three putt from 3 feet, and I hit good putts. They just caught the lip and spun out, you know. It wasn't like I, you know, missed it 6 inches on the low side or anything like that. But yeah, I'm still using the hockey stick putter and still liking it. And our friend Ryan Duffy from Meridian is also going to be at the show. And I've written about Ryan. He makes, you know, milled putters out of CNC stainless steel and beautiful putters, sort of like the Bettinardi and the Scotty Cameron putters that you see that are so expensive. But Meridian putters made in Milwaukee are at a much better price point.
Going back to the Caliber, you might not want to be broadcasting that 3 foot miss there.
Yeah.
But especially our friend John Greenberg of the Milwaukee Admirals, if they ever had a celebrity empty net contest, I think Greeny may now shy away from Gary as a participant.
Yeah, we got to get. I don't know if Greeny has a putter, but I don't know if our friends the Wright brothers have gotten in with the minor league hockey or with any of the hockey teams. But we got to get one of those in Greeny's hands if he doesn't have one.
I was also looking here. There's just I think I mentioned how much I like my Bushnell golf speaker, especially the part of it where it tells me how many. You know, it's also a measuring device, you know, to the green. But, you know, you talk about simulators. The wireless speakers are huge see a lot of those on the showroom floor. I just everything. It boggles the mind how much how many people have a footprint in the game of golf right now.
And it's funny because a lot of the companies we're talking about weren't here 10 or 15 years ago, and they become huge, huge companies. Bushnell has become enormous in golf. And, you know, then you get companies that come here with a dream and a small booth and a small budget and no, very little exposure. And sometimes those grow into great products, and sometimes it's kind of here 1 year, gone the next, and you never hear from them again. But you always wonder what is going to be the newest thing that really catches on and explodes. And whatever it is, it's going to be here this week, Rob.
And one of the time-honored booths will be Ashworth. They've been designed by golfers for golfers since 1987. That corresponds, I believe, the golf shirt I was wearing in the picture of me behind Tiger Woods that you referenced a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I believe that was an Ashworth shirt with the Cherokee Country Club logo. I no longer have it. It's I cut them off after 35 years of use, Gary. But there are some shirts and some shirt companies, if they've been around for a while, it means that their stuff lasts. And I don't have many Ashworths in my collection, but when I'm able to win one or get one, I know that will last a long time. Is there anything that that any strategy you're going to have? What's your game plan for the next 2 days as we kind of look ahead to this PGA merchandise show?
Yeah, I've got some appointments like that, Rob. Actually, quite a few because, you know, once your name is on a media list that you're going to be at the show, everyone who's exhibiting there has, you know, gets to see that list. So I've been bombarded with emails the last week or so with people inviting me to their booth or wanting to set up an interview or pitching something. And I've weeded through those and I've, you know, picked out 10 or 12 that I really want to see. And so I've set up times. So I'll be hopping from one place to another. But one thing I want to get back to Ashworth for 1 second, Rob. You know, people talk about the ball advancements in the golf ball and in the titanium drivers and the shafts, all the equipment has advanced. One of the greatest advancements in golf is the golf shirt that you no longer have to iron. Cause no, these kids today, they don't remember, they don't know that 30 years ago we had to iron our golf shirts, Rob, or they got wrinkled really badly. That's a great technology advancement.
Absolutely. And that, and especially, we'll be talking about Nick Dunlop, the amateur golfer from the University of Alabama who won the Amex over the weekend. And he already had a sponsor's exemption into the Farmers Insurance. And in his interview, you know, they asked him what he's going to do. Well, he said he's got to do laundry because he's not used to traveling, you know, by himself for 2 weeks in a row. And, you know, there's nobody else to do the laundry, although mom and dad did fly in for the final round. So I'm thinking he can probably sweet talk mom into finding the laundry at the hotel. But no, you are right. That is a huge advancement. And one that I think, you know, these kids, you know, they were
spoiled.
They're spoiled. And, you know, they wear a lot of these shirts untucked anyway. So it's, you know, the styles, the fabric, the whole deal has changed. And that's why they have a golf show, because we're always changing. But you can read Gary's stuff on Wisconsin.golf from the PGA merchandise show throughout the week. I think you were on the course day. We had our weekly meeting. I think we're going to hold one of your things for Monday. So you'll be able to read all about the merch show throughout this week and into early next week. There's nothing that it's a great time of the year. I mean, we're kind of, you know, most of the country's, you know, not golfing. And those of us who are, you know, dodging raindrops, at least down here in Arizona this week. So it's a good week to, and I hope Golf Channel has their usual coverage from it too. And I know I'll be, now that I've stumbled onto this PGAshow.com site for the media, I'm going to try to do the virtual golf show and see what's out there. But I'm fascinated by some of these companies. Gary, speaking of warm weather places, the PGA Tour Champions opened the season over the weekend in Hawaii on the Big Island at the Mitsubishi Electric Championship at Hawaii. And, boy, Steve Stricker had us on pins and needles, but the two golfers that have really dominated that tour the last 2 years, Stephen Elker 2 years ago, Steve Stricker last year, and it was Stephen Elker coming out on top and in convincing fashion, back-to-back 63s to finish, and he beats Harrison Frazier by four shots. Steve Stricker, two off the pace, entering the final round, shot a closing 66. He goes 66, 64, 66, and finishes third. Jerry Kelly with a great final round. After a pair of 69s, he shoots a 66, and he finishes T8. All in all, I thought a pretty good start to the season for the Wisconsin duo and for Mario Tiziani on the bag of Steve Stricker. So everybody involved out there in Hawaii.
Yeah, and is that did I read that right somewhere that Steve is now has 16 top three finishes in his last 21 starts, which is one of the more incredible stats you're going to see in golf anywhere. But just, you know, you look at 24 under and 54 holes, Stephen Elker is basically almost birdieing every other hole for 54 holes. Just incredible. I mean, you know, the shot making is one thing, but just to make all those putts, Rob, and Elker's a great putter and so is Steve. So no surprise seeing those two names up there, but my goodness, that's a lot of birdies from those guys.
And I'd like to say that Stephen Elker got it done the Jerry Kelly way. You remember when Jerry Kelly won in 2018, He had that one hole where he hit a shot way right into the lava rock. It bounces off the lava rock onto the green, and he winds up making I don't know if he made eagle, but I for sure made birdie. And Elker had the same thing happen in that I'm not sure, I think it was the final round, and where it hits a cart path, almost hits a Marshall, bounces off a piece of lava rock on the edge of the cart path, and then bounces on the green, and he makes a long, long putt for eagle. And at that point, you're saying this is Elker's week. But it's neat to see a guy like that lost. You know, a year ago this time, he had his original caddy on the bag. His caddy died. Like I think it was literally 12 days after the Mitsubishi tournament that where Stephen Elker finished second the last 2 years, and here we are now, a new season. You know, we saw glimpses of a great player from Stuart Sink. He finished T5. He's a guy that we think will be there through the long haul. But, you know, Harrison Frazier played really well. David Toms finished fourth behind Elker, Frazier, and Stricker. And, you know, it was just a good start. I don't really think Steve Stricker maybe, you know, had anything that, you know, came undone. He was at or near the top in putting the entire week. But, you know, hit almost all the fairways. Greens and reg were a little bit down, but he scrambled really well in his second round 64. You really would have to, you know, nitpick with a fine tooth comb to say there was anything wrong in what Steve Stricker did over the weekend.
Yeah, for sure. He finished 20 under, right?
Yes.
20 under and 54 holes. You know, he just got – sometimes you play really good and someone just plays better, and Elker just was not going to be beat this week. He played great golf, but nothing to hang your head over, you know, finishing a third, and especially that score of 20 under. I'm sure Steve's probably pretty happy with the way he played.
And then the other big news, which, you know, normally the American Express is just one of those great early season tune-ups in the desert. They play three courses over 3 days. The stadium course at PGA West, La Quinta Country Club, and then the Nicklaus Tournament course. But this week, an amateur wins for the first time since Phil Mickelson in 1991 at the old Tucson Open. And Dunlop, with a par on the final hole, beats Christian Bezuidenhout by one shot to win the American Express in the desert. I bring that up, Gary, because, again, what makes the PGA Tour great is they give young players an opportunity to break through. And tell you what, Nick Dunlop looked pretty impressive. It was a 60, I believe, at La Quinta Country Club in the third round after rounds of 64, 65, gave him a three-shot lead. He lost it with a tough hole in the front nine. I think he made a double or a triple, but then held tough until the very end. Your thoughts on an amateur winning on the PGA Tour in this live golf era and what it potentially could mean for the PGA Tour?
Yeah, a little surprised, obviously, that an amateur would win because, as you said, it hasn't happened since 91. And before that, maybe Scott Verplank, I think maybe in 85.
Yep.
So it's only been done twice in the last 40 years. That tells you how hard it is for an amateur to win. And I know he stumbled a little bit early in the round. I think he hit one in the water. I didn't watch the telecast, but I read about it. And you know, that's normally the point when an amateur, 20 years old, starts to unravel in the final round, playing against the competition he's playing against. But he held it together, played great down the stretch, and made a key birdie, I think, on the second last hole, right, to take the lead.
The par 5 16th, he was able to make the birdie. And there was another hole in there, maybe 11, where both he and Justin Thomas had a little bit of difficulty, but he managed to scratch out a par. That double bogey on 7, Gary, was his only non-par or birdie in the entire round. So you're right. He bounced back with a birdie in the very next hole. And at that point, you know, birdies for that final group were hard to come by, and it looked like everyone was have to come get them. Now, Bezuidenhout did. He made a birdie on that last hole to get within one. And so that was a real test of the young golfer's, mental fortitude being able to do that. Now, last question, Gary. He's got the opportunity now as a winner on the PGA Tour to turn professional and earn, I believe it's an exemption through the end of 26, and to play in all the elevated or designated events on the PGA Tour, or he's a sophomore at Alabama. If you go back to school, how much longer do you stay there? And, Gary, I mean, those elevated events alone, no cut, you're guaranteed money. I believe I heard the figure $20 million, but that could be a little bit high. But either way, you turn pro now, you're going to be set for a while.
I mean, you know, if he stays in school, more power to him. But how could you? I'm trying to put myself in those shoes, Robin. How can you not turn pro and take advantage of all those opportunities that are going to be in front of you? Because there's no guarantee that if you stay an amateur and finish college, which is great, I would have no problem if that was his decision. But there's no guarantee that those opportunities are going to be there for him, you know, when he gets out of school. So if it's me, I'm turning pro. But we'll see what he does. This is going to be interesting.
And he'll be at the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines this weekend on the PGA Tour. And my guess is whenever he wants to play on the PGA Tour, he will. Well, you talk about in mid-season form by the time the college season rolls around. But, you know, he was a U.S. amateur champion a year ago. And at that point, outside, it was only Dunlop and Tiger Woods that have won the U.S. Am and the U.S. Junior.
Yeah, I read that, and I found that hard to believe. I can't believe that someone else hasn't done that over the last 100 years. But those are the two.
Yeah, and then and now becomes the only golfer ever to win the U.S. and the U.S. Junior and a PGA Tour event as an amateur. And so, you know, I mean, what you're right. What else is there to accomplish? But at the same time, you know, there are a lot of years of golf ahead of him. It's just a matter of when he wants to start securing his future. So, you know, you got to say, for this LIV Golf era and losing John Rahm, they've had some pretty good storylines the first, you know, 3 weeks of the PGA Tour season. And I think Dunlop's, you can't get much better than that. Now we go to Torrey Pines. I believe that's an elevated event. So you're going to see a really good field there. And then also up at the AT&T, the first time Pebble Beach has ever been a designated event. So I think it's a pretty solid start to the season so far.
Absolutely, Rob. And then, you know, Rory McIlroy winning in Dubai for the fourth time. I think Rory finished runner-up in his last start and wins this start. Maybe this is the year finally Rory gets breakthrough at the Masters and completes the Grand Slam. I've been saying that for 8 or 9 years now, Rob, thinking he's going to do it. But Rory looks like he's playing some of the best golf of his career, too. So, yeah, there are some great, great storylines out there. We ramp up into the meat of the West Coast and then the Florida swing.
And as we wrap up Talking.Golf here, the Sweet Spot posted today. You can read about Jerry Kelly's reaction to the Jerry Kelly audible. That unfortunately will go by the wayside here for the rest of this season as the Packers lose the weekend. But he likes it, but he's not saying what the origin is of it, Gary. Very seldom do we ever get Jerry Kelly not commenting on something. But he's not letting the cat out of the bag as to where it originated and what it means. I think the what it means part, I can give him that. I'd just like to know what the story is. How did Aaron Rodgers get that into the playbook, and why did it stay after Aaron left?
Yeah, I think the question is, why did it stay after Aaron left? Because Aaron and Jerry are buddies, obviously. They play in the Pebble Beach National Pro-Am several times as partners. And so I'm sure that's the origin of that with Aaron getting a shout out to his buddy in the form of an audible. But why it stayed, I don't know. And what it means, I mean, I saw the video that we posted with the Sweet Spot, he called the audible and then threw an out to the tight end on the left sideline. But obviously there's got to be changes, because if you say Jerry Kelly and throw an out to the tight end every time, the defense is going to pick up on that pretty quickly.
Exactly.
So I don't know what all goes into that audible, but I'm sure Jerry finds that a lot of fun that Packers are still using that.
Other things that you should take a look at here on Wisconsin.golf since we last came to you here on Talking.golf, I mentioned Rick Platel's story on the Evans Scholarship winners from Wisconsin. Chick Evans, after the Evans Scholarship is named, one of the guys, one of the golfers who won as an amateur on the PGA Tour, that his name flashed up there on the screen over the weekend. So there was that link. Gary asked the question on Facebook last week and got some great responses on the worst winter conditions you've played in. And that story also up there, as is his latest in the Wisconsin Legends of Golf. Gene Haas, the former executive director of the State Golf Association, sometimes he didn't endear himself to people with some of his course setups, but then after the fact, they realized those course setups made a lot of people in the state better, including the Steve Stricker, Jerry Kelly era of future PGA Tour golfers, but you can read Gary's story there. Gary, I think it's time for you to get some rest before you get back out on the showroom floor tomorrow at the PGA Merchandise Show and at Demo Day. I hope you enjoy the heck out of it. Say hi to all our friends who might be vendors from Wisconsin, all the club pros from Wisconsin who might be down there. It's going to be a whirlwind 48 hours for you, but I'm sure you're going to enjoy every minute of it.
Well, I've got the Epsom salts ready for the bathtub every night, Rob, and I got my walking shoes. So we're going to be good to go.
That's awesome. Well, Gary, appreciate the time, and we will talk golf again next week.
Sounds good, Rob. Thank you.
For Gary D'Amato, I'm Rob Hernandez. This has been Talking.Golf, presented today by the Wisconsin State Golf Association. Did you hear the news? The Wisconsin State Golf Association is now the publisher of Wisconsin.Golf. Gary D'Amato and me, Rob Hernandez, we are contributors with many others now to the new and improved website, and you can get behind the operation as one of our partners, as a sponsor or an advertiser. Just reach out to Rob Jansen at the WSGA. His email, rob@wsga.org. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.